I think it's more important than ever that we remain steadfast in our commitment to social emotional learning's implementation, because our families, communities, and our futures depend on the quality of education we provide for our children. And the reality is the vast majority of parents want their kids to develop these skills.
What's beautiful, I think, about these types of partnerships is that we've had the opportunity to learn from them. We have walked alongside them as they've really expanded and deepened their knowledge around the connection between SEL and equity and SEL and social justice. We have funded a number of programs that have really sort of deepened our understanding, the field's understanding in all of these areas.
Could we take some of these remaining funds and actually give it directly to educators and kind of see what they would do related to SEL if they had their own resources, and how would they go about best meeting the needs of students in their own community? And that was the start of the SEL in Action Fund.
Having the flexibility to utilize our federal funding, to utilize our state funding in ways that made sense for students, and to support practices in schools and to create policies that support those practices so that it's much more centered on the students' holistic well-being as a start, I think is a good way to shift the system itself.
How can philanthropy support social and emotional learning in schools and school systems across the country, now and in the future? What kind of philanthropic supports are most helpful for teachers and schools interested in SEL?
I'm Emily Brookhart, and this is the fifth and final episode of The Power of SEL, where we explore social and emotional learning, otherwise known as SEL, and how it relates to well-being and academic achievement. This podcast is brought to you by Education First in partnership with Novo Foundation. Throughout this series, we've explored what SEL is, why it's important, and how to implement it within classrooms and districts. In each episode, you've also heard from educators across the country who are building positive relationships with students and families by creating inclusive, affirming, and culturally responsive learning environments. Many of the educators you've heard from in this podcast share a connection. They are all grantees of Novo Foundation's SEL in Action Fund. Between 2016 and 2023, Novo Foundation invested over $17 million to support classroom teachers, school leaders, district administrators, and nonprofits to implement SEL practices throughout our nation's public schools. Like Novo Foundation, many funders are committed to investing in SEL. In our final episode, we'll hear from some of these funders, including why they believe in SEL, the types of investments they've made, how SEL has helped them become more effective grant makers, and what SEL investments might look like in the future. We'll also hear from grantees about how they've used grant resources and their advice to others seeking funding for SEL programs. We'll start by hearing from a person near and dear to us here at Education First. Kelly James is our colleague and a partner at Education First, and for the last 10 years, she has advised Novo Foundation and its co-chair, Jennifer Buffett, on the design of its SEL investment portfolio.
Novo and Jennifer Buffett in particular were really involved in SEL, and they actually first brought Education First in to support, I think it was about 10 of their grantees that were doing programs and helping them to think through what would it take to kind of grow and scale their work to be able to serve and support more students and districts across the country.
Kelly James tells us how these early grantees eventually grew into the SEL in Action Fund.
We had some resources left over, and one of the things that we'd been hearing from districts was, oh, you know, here's what I as an educator want to do with my SEL practice. Here is how I'm kind of pushing SEL forward that is unique or innovative or meets the needs of my students. Could we take some of these remaining funds and actually give it directly to educators and kind of see what they would do related to SEL if they had their own resources, and how would they go about best meeting the needs of students in their own community? And that was the start of the SEL in Action Fund. And so from that, you know, kind of small initial investment, there was a lot of enthusiasm both from Novo and Ed First, and they ended up supporting the longer term multi-year creation of that fund.
Novo's SEL in Action Fund started with the belief that teachers and school leaders know their students best and have some of the most innovative ideas about how to support their social, emotional, and academic development. Next, we'll hear from other funders about what they believe and why they invested in SEL. First up is T.T. Harley from the Gates Foundation, formerly known as the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation.
I am T.T. Lola Harley. I go by T.T., and I am a senior program officer on the K-12 education team within the R&D subteam at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. It was through the experience of working through our partners and learning alongside our partners is how I really, really got to appreciate just how integral social-emotional learning is within students' educational experience, especially because at the Gates Foundation, our North Star goal is to improve the educational experiences for Black students, Latino students, and students impacted by poverty. And we are focusing specifically in the math space at the moment. And thinking about that cohort of students, those priority students in particular, there's really no way to talk about improving their educational experiences without considering their social-emotional needs. When I joined the foundation, I was very lucky in that I came into a space and there were some really thoughtful colleagues already working in the area of social-emotional learning and investing against both what we would consider as expanding and advancing the field, which looks like funding a lot of research to really understand what is social-emotional learning, what should it look like, funding a lot of work around helping teachers address their questions. And so how do we get some of that research into the hands of people who are looking for it and are closest to our students? And then it also looks like investing in what we would call solutions. So what are the things that come into schools, come into classrooms, and that could look like SEL curriculum. It could look like an SEL program that we are seeing have really outsized impact on the priority population that I mentioned, Black students, Latino students, and students impacted by poverty.
Investing in SEL supports the Gates Foundation's commitment to improving educational experiences of Black and Latina students and students impacted by poverty. Next, we'll hear from Zoe Stem Calderon at the Rakes Foundation, who expresses a similar belief.
I'm Zoe Stem Calderon. I'm the Senior Director of Youth Serving Systems at Rakes Foundation. I've been at the Rakes Foundation for 8 years, but I've spent my career in education, working at many levels of the system, beginning 24 years ago when I started as a first grade teacher in Houston Independent School District. After a long career in education as a teacher and instructional coach, I was a district superintendent to philanthropy and the Rakes Foundation, where I just found a shared commitment to the belief that all students deserve educational experiences that affirm who they are and prepare them to thrive. At Rakes, we support youth and communities, educators and policymakers to reimagine and redesign our public education system so that all young people have an excellent education, no matter who they are and where they live.
The Novo, Gates, and Rakes Foundations share a belief that SEL can improve educational experiences of students, especially Black and Brown students and students experiencing poverty. But there are many ways philanthropy can support educators and schools interested in the SEL. We've already heard from Kelly James about how Novo awarded grants directly to teachers and schools. Next, Zoe Stem Calderon tells us about some of the investments the Rakes Foundation has made to support SEL.
We've supported programs that are really driving incredible results for teachers and students. The building assets and reducing risks model, the BAR model, has achieved great success by taking a whole student approach to help educators understand students' academic, social, emotional, and physical strengths and needs. Not only has this program increased math and reading scores, it's narrowed opportunity gaps, and it's improved students' experience, but it's also changed how teachers feel satisfied in their work. And I think that has really showed us a lot about how social emotional learning is not just for supporting young people's development of skills and improving their academic performance. It also improves how teachers experience school and their jobs and makes them want to stay in the career longer. Another investment that we've made is in the Building Equitable Learning Environments Network, the BEL Network, and they've seen similar success. Many teachers are working to create a more supportive learning environment by gathering feedback from students through tools like Elevate from PERTS, which is a research-based professional learning tool that provides educators with ongoing formative feedback so they really know how are students experiencing my classroom and how can I improve their experience. I was just with a veteran math teacher in Florida who decided to use the Elevate program because she was feeling burnt out and like she wasn't bringing her best self to the classroom. And with just a short 10-minute survey, Elevate allowed her to better understand how her students experience belonging, growth, and purpose in her classroom, and then make changes that better catered to her students' social and emotional needs.
The Gates Foundation took a similar approach by investing in organizations that support students directly or that develop SEL resources for educators and schools. T.T. Harley refers to Kingmakers of Oakland and the work they do to foster a sense of belonging for Black youth in and outside of classrooms. You may recall that we heard from their CEO, Chris Chapman, in episode 3 of this series. T.T. explains how the organization's work aligns with the foundation's investment priorities.
We have funded a number of programs that have really sort of deepened the field's understanding in all of these areas. We fund an organization called Kingmakers of Oakland that has a really amazing program that is now operating in places beyond Oakland, California, but really started looking at the experiences that Black boys were having in the classroom and looking at ways to actually connect with them and help them achieve success academically, but by way of really ensuring that they had a sense of belonging in their classrooms, that the adults around them were able to foster that for them. We funded an organization called Committee for Children that has an SEL curriculum called Second Step. And this is a curriculum that many schools do bring into their classrooms to help teach just some of the concrete SEL competencies that we want students to learn so that they can become more and more successful in terms of their own ability to leverage their own emotions and their own social skills. One of the things that I think has been most impactful is when we have had the chance to actually engage with partners who engage directly with students, to hear firsthand from students about what they experience in their classrooms. It's one thing to engage with academic research, and we have some really phenomenal research colleagues who dig deep into many of the SEL competencies and learning conditions that we believe promote social-emotional learning. It's a whole other thing to hear a student talk about when they felt like they belonged in their classroom, or when they felt like their teacher really believed that they could achieve something, or when they felt like their teacher really helped them build the skills to manage anxieties that they were having in the classroom when they were trying to tackle something particularly difficult.
Many funders have discovered that SEL is a smart investment that yields powerful outcomes for students and educators. Through our work with Novo and SEL in Action grantees, we've heard countless stories similar to the one just shared by T.T. Now, we'll hear from Dr. Jared Amato, a 2-time SEL in Action Award recipient. He used his award to bring culturally responsive books to his classroom and inspire his students to read.
My name is Jared Amato, and I am a middle school English teacher here in New Jersey after 13 years teaching middle school and high school English in Nashville, and the author of Just Read It, Unlocking the Magic of Independent Reading in Middle School and High School Classrooms by Corwin Press. I had this awesome group of students. We loved to read, right? We had a bin in the library of the classics that we weren't going to read, right? Like the books were old, they were dusty. Some students were coming in with reading deficits, reading gaps. It wasn't about the book itself, but they weren't going to read it. They were going to SparkNote. Now there's ChatGPT. Like they would have found ways around it, right? And so we created a classroom environment where students love to read. We read books of our own choosing. We helped each individual tap into their interests and their strengths and just create this really awesome environment where we were reading all the time from 9th grade to 10th grade. We had started this work around project-based learning. PBL was supported by our district. And so we were going to go set about this challenge, this essential question of like, how do we increase book access in our community? And so we created Project Lit, L-I-T, Libraries in the Community. So Project Lit Community was born out of PBL and this desire to increase book access in a part of East Nashville where you weren't going to find a library or a bookstore. Books were hard to find. And so we started a book drive and set a goal of 5,000 books before Thanksgiving. We hit that. We set a goal of 10,000. We hit that.
You might be wondering, what does a book club have to do with social and emotional learning? Dr. Amato explains how Project Lit helps develop students' self and social awareness skills.
Obviously, you're stepping into the shoes of a character, and whether it was a window or a mirror, like we were able to just have these awesome conversations. And then the characters and the fiction give you the confidence and the safety to then talk about yourself.
And what impact has Project Lit had on Dr. Amato's students?
We keep track of outcomes. We do student surveys and the student writing you see and family and community engagement. We're hitting so many boxes. With just 25 books, the impact is incredible because those books, they would be read by the first 25, but then we're handing them off to another 25 and another 25. So these 25 books will be read by hundreds of people over time. And then the conversation and the critical thinking and the writing and the connection, the community, they graduated in the spring of 2019. When you asked what they miss most, it was book club, because it was every single month. They were talking to their friends, but they were also meeting new people.
Over time, Project Lit had an impact beyond Dr. Amato's classroom. Additional grant funding enabled him to reach students all across the country.
Year two was just us in Maplewood High School. But by the end of that year, we created a Google form. Hey, if you're interested in joining our community, fill this out and we'll get you onboarded and we'll get you part and we'll share our resources, what we're up to. And then by year three and four is when I had the grant. It saved me a ton of time from having to hustle each month. We had our books ready to go and we could then share our journey. Hey, here are the books we're reading, when we're reading them, come on board and follow us. And so people did. And then we hosted, I don't know if it was the SEL grant or if it was, I won a grant from Penguin Random House. But I think possibly together we used the money to host a national summit. So we hosted a Project Lit Summit at Maplewood High School in the summer of 2018. We hosted a national summit, 200 teachers. We had Kwame Alexander, Nick Stone, Tiffany Jackson, and Jeff Zettner. So four best-selling young adult authors were in attendance. Teachers from 27 states were there. We had students from all over the country, all at Maplewood High School. And we did it with just grant funding. That was it. We had no sponsors. No one had to pay to come. Like, it was all free for guests. We did a Friday night. We did a Saturday, full day. We used our high school. We had food. We had tables from our district vendor. 2019, we did the second year. So if you had just followed from afar, you're like, this is an organization. They must have money. They must be paying people. And it was all volunteer, right? Myself and our young people.
Educators like Dr. Amato took grants from Novo, typically ranging from $5,000 to $7,000, and used them to produce powerful outcomes for students. Through the SEL in Action Fund, Novo also awarded grants to school districts and charter management organizations who designed SEL projects to reach more students. Next, we'll hear from Kara Bobroff, who speaks from her experience as a grantee and funder. Kara founded the Native American Community Academy Charter School, NACA for short, in Albuquerque, New Mexico. NACA has received multiple grants from Novo over the past decade. In 2020, she founded the One Generation Fund, an organization that identifies and funds promising early-stage innovations that build sustainable solutions for Indigenous communities, deepen national efforts in Indigenous education, and support Indigenous leaders poised to impact systems change.
Yate, Kara Bobroff, Yinishe, Ashina, Shlina, Tani, Bashchin. My name is Kara Bobroff. I'm Navajo on my mother's side, born for Lakota on my father's side. I was raised in Albuquerque, New Mexico, the youngest of five, and my dad and my mom were public school educators. I started out as a special education teacher myself at the school I went to, and then also served as an assistant principal in our school district and then a dean of students up in Northern California and a small school district there, and then a principal in the Navajo Nation. And then in 2005, worked with our community to create a community-led vision around what a school could be to serve Native American youth. Currently, I serve as the executive director of One Generation. I'm excited for this conversation to delve into more what holistic well-being and holistic education and holistic development mean to our community and why it's important for kids.
Kara's commitment to supporting holistic well-being and education of Native American youth was the driving factor behind NACA. Here, she describes how NACA was created.
Our community in Albuquerque came together with two really amazing superintendents in our school district to establish a council on equity in early 2000s to start to address data that was showing like there was huge discrepancies in the outcomes of what Native students were experiencing given the population they represented in the school district, and started to ask questions around like, what can we do to better support Native students? Two advocates were part of the equity council, and they suggested a Native American magnet or charter school.
A lot of decision points go into designing and launching a school. Kara and her team took an asset-based approach, drawing from the strengths and diversity of the community.
What do we know are our strengths? The three things that folks centered on, one was access to college and rigorous learning and not having systems that keep Native students out of those pathways based on people's experiences. The second was identity and having a school environment and curriculum that supported students' background and both their identity as far as their Indigenous identity, but also their passion and like how do they see themselves. Native American people aren't monolithic. We're not all the same. I'm Navajo and Lakota. My nephew's Navajo and German and Filipino. There were students at NACA who represented four or five different tribes who are also African American and Mexican and all sorts of different things that students should be able to lift to the surface and be able to share without feeling a sense of any kind of negative reaction towards that. The third thing was the holistic wellness. And that actually was the foundation of the Native American Community Academy, was that when we started to talk about the differences between approaching something from a deficit mindset versus a holistic strength-based approach, there's about 15 of us having this conversation over 3 days. And halfway through that time, folks were like, well, it's really about how we see our own identity. Our communities for generations have had a holistic approach to well-being that has always been there, that we tend to ourselves in alignment with what nature is saying.
Kara's work to establish NACA is more evidence that SEL is a smart investment for funders seeking to make an impact. Here's how she describes the impact NACA's holistic approach, which attends specifically to its students' social and emotional learning and well-being, has had on its students, families, and the community.
My goal is to get us to the place where we're not in an institution and having to worry about all of those things being overlaid onto our communities and students and families. When I see young people at NACA or any of the schools or in other cases where they're being tended to in a way that's holistically supportive and well, and they're able to then embody those things for themselves, that to me is the success in the sense of what it is we're trying to accomplish. And I see it through them being able to articulate their own vision for like what they want to accomplish and do in the world, to being able to use reflection as a key component of who they are, to realize that they're in relationship with the other children within the school, within the community, within their family, their relationship to the land, and understanding that land-based learning and land-based practices with both food and medicine and water are all things that they are connected to and care for. To me, those are the things that I know that if we all know those things, that's going to be much better served over a period of time and really sets us all up to be in good relationship with one another and be in relationship with the earth and be in a good relationship with what is possible to get rid of some of the things that have been introduced into our communities because of the toxicity of the historical context of education. So see that come alive in an individual student, and I've seen that come alive within a community. And so I think those are the things I would point to.
So far, we've learned how some funders think about SEL and the impact they've had on schools and students through SEL investments. But when we talked to these funders, we also heard how social and emotional learning and engaging with SEL grantees caused them to think differently about their approaches to grant making. Throughout this podcast series, we've heard about the transformative effects of SEL for educators and students. As it turns out, SEL can also change the ways philanthropy operates. For example, the funders we spoke with all mentioned how important it is across investment areas to engage with people who are proximate to the problems you are trying to solve and provide funding directly to those people. To explore the different ways funders can engage with grantees and prospective grantees, we'll hear first from Michelle Wallace, an SEL in Action grantee from Austin, Texas, who now serves as the executive director of the Austin Ed Fund. Michelle explains how collaboration between funders and educators is essential to solve the challenges facing our schools.
My name is Michelle Wallace, and I serve as the executive director for the Office of Innovation and Development for the Austin Independent School District. As a part of that role, I also serve as the executive director for our education foundation in Austin, the Austin Ed Fund. A lot of funders, they're not interested in transactional relationships, especially in this work. We have spent a lot of time on the school district side helping our team build strategy. And one of the things I've observed is a lot of folks that have grown up in K-12 public education, there can be a mentality of scarcity, right? We get our budget every year. We stretch it as far as we can freaking stretch it. And like, we're grateful if anything else comes in. One of the first things I did when I started working in education was sit down with a program leader and say, if you could do what you wanted to do or what you thought needed to be done in the next 5 years, what would that be? Like, if money were no object, you know, what would it look like? And the eyes looking back at me were like, you're crazy. Like, what do you mean? Why are we even having this conversation? But that's the kind of dreaming and strategy work that we should be doing and supporting.
Kelly James describes how Novo's SEL in Action Fund invested directly in teachers because of their proximity to students and knowledge of what they need to be successful.
I think really investing in the belief that teachers can design solutions to some of the most pressing problems. And then I don't think it has to be either or, because Novo also invested in districts as part of this fund. I don't think I've seen this type or level of investment, 5,000 to 7,000 in this number of teachers around their own ideas and how they can best support the work. And so I think both that belief in grassroots problem solving to your own challenges within your own communities. And then two, I think the trust in grant making. I think there's a lot of research out there about trust-based philanthropy. I think Novo really walks that talk, at least through this fund, and not only how EdFirst was able to support grantees, but in the way they listened to us, who they felt like were much closer to the educators and system leaders that we were interacting with, and being able to make pivots and changes based on what we were hearing in the field.
The Austin Education Fund created a program with a similar goal of giving teachers the resources to create change in their classrooms. Michelle Wallace talks about the impact of this program.
One of the programs that we started through the Ed Fund about 5 years ago was a teacher grant program. We call it Inspire the Future Grant Program. And that grant program supports classroom level projects, and educators can request funding for ideas that they have up to $10,000. When we started it, people thought, oh, isn't that cute? That's a nice program and it will support teachers, and everybody wants to support teachers. And it does support teachers. But we've learned over time that the power of that program is so much more. What we've heard from educators over time is those classroom level grants allow them to connect with this broader initiative across the district. They may be implementing lessons in their classroom, but they're also able to take their own ideas and put them into practice. Sometimes teachers are asking for as little as $250, you know, and sometimes it's up to $10,000. I think it's an opportunity to support the agency of educators to know that true innovation is happening in the classroom every day. And we want to lift that up and highlight it. And in particular, when it relates to social emotional learning, I think it's given educators an opportunity to create their own initiatives and ideas in their classroom too, which has been awesome to see.
Jared Amato shares a similar sentiment from his perspective as a teacher.
I love what I do. You should trust us. I've done this for a long time. I'm passionate about it. I care about this. I think about this stuff 24/7. You don't think about this all the time. It's also not your job to think about it all the time, but I do. I'm in here every day with these young people listening to them. I think I know a little bit better what they need day to day. And I've got my degrees to show you. I've got my experience. And that's where it comes back to the teacher support. There's a whole different conversation with teacher respect and autonomy.
Kara Bobroff explains what it has meant for funders to engage tribal communities to support schools like NACA by giving them more control over how they use grant dollars.
We know that folks that are closest to the work, that being the kids, the families, the educators, know exactly what it is that they need to do. And then having the trust and the relationship to know that that's going to happen. And I think that's both in a philanthropic setting, but also through state and local education agencies, as well as our federal agencies. There's that. And within the context of like Native communities and tribal communities, tribal sovereignty is something that needs to be upheld at a federal level. And the whole idea is that tribes can determine for themselves through self-determination. There's other tribal colleges and other entities that said, this is how we want to determine for ourselves what our education could be that are federally funded. So I think that's always something that should be kept in mind. Again, is like this notion that there is and there isn't, that idea that we can't utilize funding the way we should, dictated by our students and our families and our communities.
Zoe Stem Calderon explains the importance of funders engaging different people and learning from various perspectives to solve big social problems through its grant making.
Particularly speaking of funders, you should have your perspective shaped by people who don't look like you and don't live where you live. Because America is big, and if we're going to build the kind of schools that really serve all of us well, we've got to really be learning from lots of different perspectives. That's been really important. At RAICS, we think about our work as field builders. We don't pick a winner and fund one program because we think it's going to change the world. We recognize that every big social problem has been solved with lots of different capabilities, many different people across a big field. So I would encourage new funders, get in and learn from folks. People will teach you things and they will shift your perspective and point of view. And that's when you'll know you're doing better work.
Finally, here's T.T. Harley describing how understanding students' SEL needs and finding grant partners that represent the students they are serving are critical to the Gates Foundation's efforts to support equitable and inclusive learning environments.
That's where equity overlaps with SEL, where we really understand that by being really thoughtful about student social emotional needs, we're able to create the types of spaces that are more equitable because now they are addressing the needs of more than one type of student. And so we have been really thoughtful and committed to engaging with partners who are really proximate to the experiences of our priority students. We know that if we're working with a partner who is a Black man or a Latina woman, she knows what it's like to be a young Latina student in a classroom that may or may not have been designed in ways or have the learning conditions that allowed her to thrive. And so she is going to bring that to the work that she does, the research that she does, and add just so much more depth and color. It has just become completely clear that when you are talking and working with a person who actually experienced these things themselves, and they are taking not only what they are learning through the research studies that they are conducting or maybe consuming to inform the steps that they are taking, but they're pairing that with the personal experience that they have had, it takes the innovation and it takes the commitment and the focus to a completely different level.
What other lessons can philanthropy learn from investing in SEL? Kara Bobroff talks about the importance of flexibility as she shares how NACA could use its grant dollars to meet students' needs.
In the philanthropic sector, I would say being able to understand the idea of having, both as a nonprofit leader and also as a principal, having flexible funding to be able to direct it towards. Some of our teachers really want to go see this amazing school and learn from them and be able to bring that back and incorporate that into their practice. Or some of us want to be able to provide a summer learning experience that our students and families are going to be engaged in. That's land-based as well. For a new initiative to be able to bring that into action, into practice, into the school, that takes time as well, and being able to have the flexibility to use funding in a way that makes sense to do something like that. And I think of our Lakota language course that came from a request from one of our students in our first year after they saw we had Navajo language. They came and they brought a book that they found at home to one of our instructors and said, can we have a Lakota language class? Like, I found this book. It's really cool. I know we have Navajo and that's really great too. And he was like, well, I know how to speak it, but I haven't taught it. And I was, can we do this? I was like, yeah, absolutely. Let's do that. But we utilized Indian education funding to create the Lakota language course. And then it became a sustainable part of our school. So I think that both state, federal, philanthropic funds can be utilized differently in order to allow more flexibility to be more responsive to student needs and to also be more responsive to what learning means. And it's not just isolated to a school building, a classroom, and a rote curriculum. It's actually much broader than that. And having students be in the most natural setting that they can be in is probably much more beneficial than just thinking of education in one dimension. We can use a lot of different types of funding for different purposes. The other thing is there's this notion I've experienced that you think you have to do something a certain way. And the answer is you really don't. You just do what you know to be right by the students you're serving and the children and families you work with. And you figure out the way to make that happen. And so I think there's some navigation that takes place. And I also feel like the field itself should be shifting. And there's this opportunity to really reimagine what learning can be for students and families in our country.
Kelly James talks about the advantages of funder collaboratives, where multiple funders with similar interests bundle their investments together to achieve a greater impact. Kelly is one of the recent authors of Surviving to Thriving, Funder Collaboratives That Matter. We'll link this paper in our show notes for you to read.
I am a big advocate for collaborative funding. I'm going to steal this term from someone else that kind of captured something that I saw a lot and put it in this form of program ego or strategy ego. A lot of foundations have so much ego related to their strategy. And I don't mean that dismissively, but it's like they've worked so hard on it, right? They're very attached to it. They want to see it work. This is not a really bad thing, but it also means that when you go out to the field and you're hearing from those most on the margins or those most proximate to the challenge that you might be trying to address, that all that energy and resources that you've put into that strategy make it so hard to pivot or move away from that. Collaborative grant making kind of forces you to think about, how can my strategy overlap with others? How do we find connections and synergy? And those connections and synergy, I think, make it easier for the grantees in the field.
Zoe Stem Calderon also witnessed the power of funder collaboratives. She references the Ed Forward Funder Collaborative, which is now called Ed Future.
There are some amazing communities where you can learn as a funder about what's happening across the field. So Grantmakers for Thriving Youth, Youth Transition Funders Group, the FAST Funders Collaborative, Funders for Adolescent Science Translation. There are just many different funders collaboratives. We lead one called Ed Forward that's working on how do we defend inclusive public schools. We also have a funders collaborative that works on school funding called Resource Equity Funders Collaborative. So there are just many more collaboratives in the field today in the philanthropic space. And I think that's a great thing. None of us are going to solve the kind of big problems that our country faces funding alone. That's not going to work. So funding in partnership with others and understanding what people are learning and doing more together has been really pivotal for us at RAICS.
Kelly shares another lesson we learned from our work with Novo: how to reduce the administrative burden of grant paperwork on grantees. When we administered the SEL in Action Fund, we went to great lengths to create grant applications and annual reporting templates that were accessible and less time-consuming to complete. While reducing paperwork may not sound like much, it has big implications for grantees and for equity.
Some of the things that stood out to me for Novo were, for example, low burden in application and low burden in reporting. That's not always necessary. I think there are places and spaces for that. But for a foundation that's investing directly in teachers or in districts that have not been heavily resourced over time or not the big districts that are continually getting those grant-making funds from philanthropy, I think that Novo did a really nice job of aligning the burden of grant making, the burden of reporting with the capacity of those responding to the grants. And so really low burden for educators. And it would be kind of inappropriate, I think, to ask educators to over-report on these small grants when they're also deeply engaged in their classrooms and have responsibilities to their school communities. Post the racial pandemic, a lot of interest in supporting BIPOC leaders or equity-driven leaders, but actually putting a pretty high burden on those individuals and organizations without the corresponding amount of funds. So I think we did see an increase in philanthropic dollars to BIPOC leaders and BIPOC-led organizations. Most of the time, it actually wasn't significant amounts of funding, right? So it's like asking more and being like, you can work on these systemic issues of racism because of the place you sit in the field, but we're actually not putting a lot of money behind it, and we're making the burden on you really high. And that both from a reporting burden, like how much I have to report, but also like, will you come speak on this? And will you come talk to my team on this? And will you talk to my other partners on this? And so I think just that intellectual capacity burden as well.
Kelly also explained the role that philanthropy can play in networking, connecting grantees and sharing best practices across the country.
I also believe that philanthropy has a great privilege of being able to spend time looking across the field and learning and keeping up with research and being able to say, I saw this in Cleveland and you're doing this in Denver. And there's actually a process. You don't have to reinvent the wheel. And I feel like if we can, in philanthropy, enter into those spaces humbly, but also I do think because of that place in the field, there is expertise to bring to those solutions. And you just have to think about, am I bringing them because I'm so emotionally tied to my strategy and I can't flex, or am I bringing them because I've actually had a chance to look at 50 state research, which you haven't, or know that you don't need to redesign a mentoring program from scratch because so many people have done it. Here are some really good models. Now, how do you adapt to your context?
Bringing grantees together, whether those grantees are organizations, districts, or teachers, fosters lasting synergy and camaraderie, shows grantees that they are valued, and often provides the sheer motivation that is required to continue the hard work that educators do every day. We heard this over and over again from the educators that we brought together every year for our SEL in Action convenings. As an example, one teacher commented, "This was the best conference I have ever attended. I not only learned so much from my peers, it was an indescribable feeling to connect with like-minded people. I honestly didn't want to leave. Thank you for this opportunity. I feel encouraged to keep fighting for kids." Michelle Wallace shares more about the impact of bringing together teachers who receive funding for SEL in their classrooms in Austin.
It can be very easy to feel isolated, either as a teacher in your classroom or as your campus. Like, does anyone know what's happening here in my classroom? And we've had teachers tell us, I didn't know that the community cared about what was happening in my classroom. And I see it and feel it now. Man, that's huge. And it's hard to quantify that. But when we bring educators together that are in our cohorts of educators who've won these grants and they're visiting about their ideas and their best practices, it is incredible the spirit and the energy and the connection in those rooms. That is just as important as the projects themselves.
Change is inevitable, including in philanthropy. Funder priorities and strategies evolve, resulting in different philanthropic investments. As we noted at the beginning of this episode, Novo gave its last grants for the SEL in Action Fund at the end of 2023. Other funders, like the Gates Foundation, have integrated SEL into their several bodies of grant making rather than specifically focusing on SEL. What do these changes mean for funders and grantees? We asked funders to share their views on what the future of SEL grantmaking will look like. First, we'll hear from Zoe Stem Calderon, who anticipates more funding will be directed toward SEL data collection and assessing the quality of learning environments.
Data is powerful, and measuring students' experiences can tell us if we're succeeding in creating the kind of learning environments that support students' whole healthy development. We need to keep developing and supporting districts and states to adopt measures so we know how we're doing on these things without turning to using them punitively. I mean, there's a bunch of ways that can go wrong, but I think there's some really important ways that they help educators. I think another really powerful place to invest is in funding. We can't provide the learning environment students need when we're underfunding our public schools. And by working toward full and fair school funding, we can ensure all kids have access to high quality SEL programs and learning environments that are rich and really preparing them for the world. We think a lot about funding the advocacy and policy, the coalitions that are working to make sure their schools are fully and fairly funded.
Zoe Stem Calderon also notes how better data and research helps philanthropy, policymakers, and educators make better decisions about allocating resources toward students with the greatest need.
we just won't get to where we want to be, where we have a really strong economy, we have strong leaders, if we're investing intentionally in inequality across our schools. And so California made a commitment to change this, and they built a statewide weighted funding formula called local control funding formula. They weighted money so that if you're a child living in poverty, or if you're an English language learner, or if you're in a school of concentrated poverty, you got more funding, which just makes sense because you have access to less opportunity in your community. And what they're seeing after several years of implementation and some really rigorous studies is that weighted funding makes a big difference in students' outcomes. Rucker Johnson just did an evaluation, and you can see that kids are catching up a whole year in math over 3 years of targeted investment into their schools, because now schools can invest in the acceleration programs that students need if they're behind. They can support broader social emotional learning, wraparound supports for students. They can attract and retain higher quality teachers. These are all really important investments we need to make together if we really say what we want is what we want, which is we say we want a school system that serves everybody really well. I believe we do want that. Then we've got to use strategies in the way that we invest our shared resources together that actually follow through on that. So yeah, there's a lot funders can do in that space.
The Gates Foundation recently refreshed its investment strategy. T.T. Harley explains how focusing on one area, math, impacts social and emotional learning and has ripple effects for other subjects and school as a whole.
We have just become a lot more laser focused on thinking about how we see SEL show up in an academic classroom, because that is where students spend the vast majority of their time. They might have the benefit within their schools of 30 minutes or so at the end of the day doing something specifically focused on SEL. But what about the remaining 5.5 or so hours that they're spending with other teachers? And so being able to think within the math context has allowed us to work with partners to really say, okay, so now how are we using the information that comes through the PERTS assessment to really inform math teachers and the math classroom? How are we learning about Castle's work to really think about what it looks like to have SEL be integrated into academics? What ways can we help take that information and share it with math curriculum developers and product developers so that they are able to really think about building products that our kids are using day in, day out in their classrooms in ways that also cater to their socio-emotional needs and not just their academic content needs?
TT is describing what we call integration, specifically the integration of SEL in academic content and other school or system priorities. Many researchers have rightly noted that all learning is social and emotional, so it's important to weave SEL into math, reading, and science lessons. TT explains how integrating SEL can increase student motivation and engagement.
I'm really grateful to say that in my work, I have the opportunity to interact with math product developers who are designing their products to be the most engaging and the most motivating to our students. It's not about, oh, this kid is motivated, this kid is not, so let's write off the kid who isn't and be focused on this. It's really understanding that every student has the same capacity to be motivated and engaged. So what can we do within the programs we're developing and designing? How can we leverage technology like AI to actually help to start tackling some of the social emotional needs that students have? So one of the things that we're seeing are various partners really exploring how to leverage artificial intelligence to better understand what students are interested in, and then taking that information and utilizing that to sort of be the topic that the math gets taught through.
Integrating SEL also provides more opportunities for culturally inclusive practices, which also support student engagement.
Hopefully gone will be the days when you are sitting in a math classroom and it's asking you a question. You know, you're looking at a word problem that's like, TT has 6 apples, where it's like, I don't care about apples. Let's talk about soccer. My son right now is all about soccer. And it's not just sort of replacing apples with soccer balls, right? The students are way more intelligent than that. Students are way more astute. It's actually taking some knowledge of the game or presenting some knowledge of the game and then utilizing that, right? Because all of a sudden now the students are more engaged. They feel like, oh, wow, my teacher cares about the things I care about. Here we are talking about soccer. And now I'm much more apt to pay attention, feel a sense of belonging. similarly with elements of their identities, right? Like really thinking more broadly about what we teach around various subjects. There's so much rich history and information about, you know, math specifically, right? That we only get a sliver of when we learn about any of the more prominent mathematicians. But what about the work of the ancient Egyptians and the Mayan civilizations that were absolutely using math to build pyramids? How do we bring that up? Because what that means is now a young person of South American and Central American descent is seeing how this isn't something that is not for people who have their identity. This is something their ancestors have been thinking about and doing for years and years and years. And similarly, you know, we have partners who are using virtual reality to create environments where students get to solve, like, the pandemic as an example. And they're very, very deliberate about making the identities of the characters in this virtual reality environment, right? So now you've got immunologists and doctors and disease experts who are Black women that really represent the full diversity of a classroom.
Kelly points out that philanthropy can support schools to integrate SEL into mental health support, school safety, and student discipline.
And I think particularly in private philanthropy, have seen a trend a little bit away from funding SEL work, which has been surprising to me as we come out of the pandemic. I think the demand from educators, whether you call it SEL or not, the silos that we work in, the big ones that stick out to me is school safety, which is sadly an ever-pressing issue, mental health, and SEL. I think sometimes those get bundled up and conflated, and other times they get so separated you're not thinking about how they are reinforcing each other. A trend that worries me, because I think that people are rightly concerned with academic acceleration. And that is super important and super important, particularly for kids that have historically been on the margins and that they even suffered more. But the lack of our ability to really integrate our systems and to kind of put academics, SEL, as opposed to thinking about how those go together or thinking about, will it be easier if I return to a punitive discipline system and then my educators can focus on literacy or math? What I would hope to see is, whether people call it whole child or the integration of social, emotional, and academics, and how we support and prepare our educators to lead classrooms and school buildings. When we get so zeroed in on the thing that we want to do that is usually really important, we kind of lose that space for integration and thinking about how the pieces fit together as a whole, which I think reinforces my point about collaboration. If funders can at least think about, I'm going to do school safety and you're going to do high quality instruction about math and literacy. What does it look like for us to show up in a school system and that feel integrated and send that message and support to district leaders so they can think about it in an integrated manner?
As we near the end of the power of SEL, we turn to one of Castle's three signature practices, an optimistic closure. In our work with each other and grantees, we try to model the SEL practices. So we're celebrating the end of this podcast series with an optimistic closure of our own. Here's Michelle Wallace and Dr. Jared Amato.
I just have seen over and over our community in Austin, when we put out a call and we ask, they continue to show us that they will step up. And it's pretty incredible. And so it's just having an optimism about there's a lot of people out there that want to help. We just have to figure out how to connect the need to the people that want to help. And we can do that. That's a thing that we can do. But I think it's easy to kind of have this sense of people not being, but I've seen it. They do. They want to support, and they want to support our kids and our teachers.
Patience. I know everyone's looking for quick fixes and magical programs and magic things that are like, if you buy this one thing or do this one thing, it's going to transform. And it's not that easy. And even for the teachers who are like, you know, what's the best book that we should read as a school? There's no one book, right? For us, it was that we read all the time. It was one book after another. If we could go back, we would probably do some different books, but that's what we had the money for. But it wasn't about one specific book or one specific program. It was really just all the little things that add up over time. it doesn't have to be perfect, right? I think sometimes we try to have the perfect plan or the perfect project. It doesn't even have to be super original. Just doing good work with your young people in your community. Sometimes we look for like the fancy name or the fancy new thing that's done, but really a lot of the best things we can do are really, really simple and powerful.
Throughout this podcast, you've heard how SEL has been transformative, not only for students, teachers, and families, but also for grant makers, encouraging a focus on partnerships, collaboration, providing people with the flexibility and funding to explore their own solutions, and attending to the process of grant making to make it less burdensome. This speaks to the true power of SEL and the many ways that we can move education forward if we attend to people and relationships. Thank you for joining us on this journey of learning about social and emotional learning. I want to leave you with one emotion that has stuck with me and my team as we reflect on our work with SEL. Love. Love is at the heart of social and emotional learning, and it's one of the core values that drove Novo to invest in SEL. At Education First, we work with a lot of funders, but Novo is unique in naming love as a core value and living into that value in its grant making. I personally have felt that love working alongside Novo and such incredible teachers and school and district leaders. My team has also felt that love, and we think our partners and grantees felt it as well. How do we know? Well, over and over again, we heard our interviewees talk about love and gratitude. So in the spirit of love and gratitude, the final words of this podcast will be from our interviewees. Here's Ivy Cruz, Jeff Austin, Chris Chapman, Dr. Dina Simmons, Trish Schaefer, and Miles Williams.
It was just a simple gesture to be grateful for my life, grateful that I get to teach these students, you know, this attitude of gratitude. I don't always have it, but, you know, try to remember that if our cups are full, then we can share that full cup with others.
They know why they're there, but they need to feel appreciation, hope, and action and love.
For me, this is the work. It's the beautiful struggle. It's going to get messy. And you got to be willing to let go of your ego and be present, knowing that, hey, they may not agree, they may not like, but at the end of the day, it is all about love and humanity.
So our work as educators, particularly as educators who care about equity, particularly educators who teach Black and Latinx youth, we have to keep that spark of imagination, of dreaming, of freedom dreaming alive.
It is certainly, I would think, a worthwhile endeavor. And for me, it has been the work of my career. And it has made a huge difference for our community and for me as a human. So whether you're just beginning or you've been doing this for a very long time, continue to lean in because humans deserve it.
It's been such a valuable experience for me and for the folks that I work with to be able to just ground education in mental health and awareness. And so grateful to be here and grateful to be doing this work. I want to do it for a really long time.
The Power of SEL is brought to you by Nova Foundation, Education First, and Big Duck. Special thanks to our guests, Dr. Jared Amato, Kara Bobroff, Titi Lola Harley, Kelly James, Zoe Stem Calderon, and Michelle Wallace. Our Education First production and writing team is Chad Rubicaba, Bernie Ramsey, Fatima Omar, and Aaron Papelka. From Big Duck, strategic guidance is by Farah Trompeter, artwork design by Claire Taylor Hansen, copywriting by Nicole Tufts, project management by Brenda Perez, and recording, editing, and sound design by Marcus DePaula. Music is by Cody Martin. This podcast is made possible because of the work of the SEL in Action Fund grantees, who you can learn more about at thepowerofsel.org. I'm Emily Brookhart. Thank you for joining us on this journey of exploring well-being and academic achievement through social and emotional learning on The Power of SEL.